This Civic Media podcast is sponsored by UW Organ and Tissue Donation. Organ donations are desperately needed, and now is the right time to become an organ donor. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. Go to heroicdeed.com.
Good morning. Welcome to Matt and Air on Air. Jane Matt and Air, Greg Bach, and Calvin Butenhoff coming to you live from our studio here at Radio Park in Racine. You can always join us, call or text. The number is the same. It's 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and the platform that used to be Twitter. We have a jam-packed show coming up for you at 10:33, right after the news. Jim Santel, our colleague here at Civic Media. He is host of Amicus, a Law Review, on Saturday mornings from 9 to 11 across the network. I highly encourage you to check out his show, or at least listen to the podcast.
Yes.
Jim is a former U.S. attorney and is still a practicing attorney. And there have been some legal things going on.
Just a few.
Just a couple of things that we're going to talk about with Jim Santel. It's Friday. That means Dan Schaefer from the Recombobulation area will be here after 11 o'clock. We're going to kick around Wisconsin legislature back in session for the first time after a brief vacation.
Just a long weekend.
A long weekend of 300 days. And what did they get done in their first week back in Madison? We're also going to talk to Dan about, and we talked about this earlier this week, Wisconsin population is not increasing.
Yes.
And the forecasts are not necessarily very promising. So we're going to talk about that with Dan Schaefer. And then there's some burbling about some angry people about the new Milwaukee Public Museum. It feels to me like they're really trying to make something out of nothing.
Well, I mean, look at, we'll talk about it more later, but look who's writing it and we'll talk. It means
it's a far right group that seems to be fostering this. So we will kick that around with Dan Schaefer in hour number two. We'll wrap it all up, as we always do, at 11:51 with This Shouldn't Be a Thing. Today it is the Oops, Wrong Number edition. Yeah, you don't want to do that. Doesn't work out well. If you ever have a thing you think should not be, send it in to Greg and me at Jane Says, J-A-N-E-S-A-Y-S, Jane Says at civicmedia.us. It can be anything. If you have a complaint, you want to yell at me, please send it to Jane Says at civicmedia.us. If you have a guest that you would like us to highlight, maybe an issue going on in your community, no matter where you are across the state, send it in to Jane Says, J-A-N-E-S-A-Y-S, at civicmedia.us. This is breaking as we come on the air. Happened about a half an hour ago. Donald Trump was sentenced in New York today. He will now become the first incoming president in history to enter office as a convicted felon. Donald Trump, however, there will be no punishment.
None.
There's nothing. Nothing's going to happen to him for his 34 felony counts. These were based on fraud.
Yes.
These were fraud counts. Yes, he paid Stormy Daniels hush money, which in itself is not illegal. Jim will break this down a little bit more thoroughly, but it's my understanding that he hid the payment, and that's where the fraud comes in.
Yeah, he hid the payment.
To make it look like a business expense.
And I like the question I asked before is like, would this have, nothing would have happened had he just said, "Hey, underling, go to the bank, pull a check, make it out to whomever, and give it to them."
Yep. But he didn't do that.
He didn't do that.
No, he decided to hide it, and that's where the fraud came in. So we'll break that down a little bit more thoroughly with Jim Santel after the 11:30 news. Donald Trump walks out of court today. Actually, he appeared virtually. Despite the record, despite what's being said by the DA's office, at the end of the day, Donald Trump is a free man. Again, without any consequences for this, except now he becomes the first convicted felon as president of the United States. I saw something else this morning that said that he won't be able to vote.
Oh, no. What a punishment for him.
Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, of course, can step in and do something about that, which I highly anticipate that he will.
Absolutely.
If he were a regular person, say,
yeah,
Donald Trump could have served up to 4 years in prison and a $35,000 fine for each charge. 34 counts. That would have added up to something pretty hefty.
You said 35,000?
35,000 each count.
35,000 times 34. That's $1.19 million.
Well, you could probably get that either from Elon or Tim Cook or, you know, all the guys who were paying for his inauguration now could shell out a little money to help him cover his legal debts. But again, nothing's going to happen.
Nothing's going to happen.
That is not going to happen.
No consequences for that man. And he is going to be the president of the United States. And it's disgusting. And I am ashamed.
I think there are many of his supporters who find that a plus.
Yeah. And I don't want to know him. I don't want to have dinner with them. Because you know what? They consider themselves Republicans.
Rule of law.
And, back the blue and rule of law and law and order and personal responsibility.
Right. From the guy who doesn't take responsibility for anything, but continue.
But, you know, when it comes to this guy, and actually any of your guys really getting in trouble. I mean, really, there should be people from the Congress being investigated for January 6th. Oh, no, it's fine. Why is there no personal responsibility for them? Why is it a double standard? Why good enough for me, not for thee?
Well, because it was all wrong.
Yeah.
It was all wrong. He never should have been charged. It was all made up. It was all a witch hunt or lawfare, which is the new favorite word.
It befuddles me to why I should have to respect anyone who thinks that people should be able to get away with these kinds of crimes. Well, people putting up yard signs and wearing t-shirts saying, I voted for the felon. On what planet are you a good person at that point? When you say, I'm going to vote for the person who committed a crime, even though I'm a part of the law and order party.
Because again, they feel he was unjustly prosecuted.
Yeah, I guess so. I understand what you're saying, but like, I don't give them that much credit. Like, they honestly, they love this. They love this.
This is stabbing the liberals in the eye, right? Yeah, this is a win for them.
So I guess I'll go back to a question we've asked before then. Do you want your kids or your grandkids to grow up like this?
Should they model his behavior?
Yeah, or just of the GOP. Should they act in such a way that, you know, they get to commit crime? Because I got news for you listeners who think this is awesome. You're not Donald Trump. You're not a millionaire. You're not a billionaire. You don't have this sort of influence and power and money. You will go to jail.
Yeah, you're not going to get the same treatment as Donald Trump did.
Not at all.
Because I'm fairly certain this is the Supreme Court isn't going to come out and say, U.S. citizens can go ahead and do whatever they want. They have full immunity, so hey, it's just all fine.
Hey, Steve, it's fine.
It's fine. We'll talk about this a little bit more with Jim Santel again after the 10:30 news. I think it's important. Also, we're going to talk about the phone call that Donald Trump placed to Supreme Court Justice Samuel Alito.
Totally normal, perfect phone call.
Just to chat about a potential hire seems perfectly normal. And perfectly fine.
Totally legitimate.
And if Joe Biden had been calling members of the Supreme Court, I don't know, there would have been no ripples either, Greg. Nobody would have noticed that at all. It's perfect. It just happens.
Just tired of the double standard, Jane. I really am.
Something else that broke this morning, the final jobs report under President Biden is in. The U.S. economy added 256,000 jobs in December, far exceeding expectations. The unemployment rate down to 4.1%. Wages grew 3.9% over the past year, well above the 2.7% inflation rate. So Donald Trump, once again, is inheriting a pretty healthy economy, just like he did from President Obama.
Mm-hmm. And he's going to slam it into the ground, and he's going to ruin it. I'm going to go based on, and here's the thing is, I get to go based off of experience from the last time he left office with a terrible economy in our hands. COVID. Like the way he handled COVID, the way he did everything, and this is what happens almost every time.
People forget. We have very short memories.
I don't think it's that they've, well.
I think we have very, very short memories.
I think some people forget And then some people just don't want to admit.
That could well be too.
Yeah. So this notion that we had the greatest economy ever under Donald Trump, hogwash.
Complete hogwash.
And we also understand that the jobs report, the stock market, all of the economic indicators that the U.S. government uses for the economy are different than what the price of eggs is, what milk costs, what groceries cost, schooling, diapers, dog food costs. We understand all of that. But on paper, officially, the economy from a point of view of the U.S. government is robust and growing. And I do not foresee a version of this where Donald Trump takes this and grows it bigger. He is going to drive it into the ground with tariffs.
Yes. And tax cuts for the wealthy.
Tax cuts for the wealthy. All his greatest hits, really. He's really going to come back and just do all the things he did before, which had no help to us. I mean, between the tax cuts that benefit the rich. I'm not rich. Jane, are you rich?
I am tragically not rich.
Tariff, which caused a trade war, which we talked about yesterday, 2 days ago with Darren, had to cut, I think it was a $12 billion check.
To America's farmers.
Yeah. So that's not good as well. So, like, there's not a version anyone can propose to me where Donald Trump takes a robust economy and just makes it better and better and better.
Andrew from Maine on the text line. I'm waiting for the next round of elections where campaigns can rap with, I'm Andrew, I'm a convicted felon, and I approve this message.
Yeah. It's the notion that some people think that it's a point of pride and honor that he got arrested, got charged, found guilty, no sentence, no real punishment. It just really bothers me that some people listen and they go, yeah.
He got away with it.
Well,
got away with it.
Cool. I hope your grandkids love him because, you know, they're going to try to commit crimes too.
We're going to talk about the wildfires in California when we return. You can always join us. Call or text. The number is the same, 855-752-4842. You're listening to Matt Nair on air. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Good morning. Welcome to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach. Dr. Slide on the board, coming to you from our studio here at Radio Park in Racine. You can always join us, call or text at 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC. Leave a comment if you're watching in the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Jim Santel, host of Amicus, a law review across the network on Saturday mornings from 9 to 11, and a former U.S. attorney going to be joining us to talk about things in the news, including Donald Trump. Essentially, he is now an official convicted felon.
With no punishment.
Yeah, he's kind of skating away, except again, with the honor, dubious though it may be, of being the first convicted felon to be elected president of our fine country.
I just feel like he shouldn't get a library then.
It's going to be really small.
It's a pamphlet.
Well, it's going to have lots of pictures.
It's pictures of his tweets.
Lots and lots of pictures, I'm sure. And we did have a comment on the live stream that I think Cassandra makes a really good point. I don't understand why they're so why they're fighting so hard against Jack Smith's report being released at this point. It's not like anybody's going to care, right? I think you would make an excellent point, Cassandra, and we're going to talk about that with Jim Santel, too. Eileen Cannon, judge in Florida, kind of stepping in to this situation with the Jack Smith report. Mm-hmm. I don't know how she has jurisdiction on that.
Well, good thing we know. And it, what's funny is that right now on the live stream, Jim Santel's in the back waiting for us, and I can see him smiling going, oh, I'll tell you. I will tell you.
That's why we have experts. That's why we are lawyer adjacent on this program, so we can have folks who can actually break this down and explain it. So we'll kick that around a little bit more after the 10:30 news.
Tom on the live stream also brings up now every time. Now do we call him every time we see him? Convicted felon, president, convicted felon, Trump.
I like president, convicted felon.
I like felon Trump. That just rolls off the tongue. Felon Trump.
FT. That works too. We did want to take a couple of minutes to talk about these just apocalyptic fires in California. Yeah. The headline from the Washington Post: so far, 10 have been killed. 10,000 structures feared destroyed as these wildfires rage into a fourth day. There are now 5 active wildfires, including the Palisades fire that burned almost 20,000 acres, one of the most destructive natural disasters in the history of L.A., the Eaton fire, over 13,000 acres, the Kenneth fire has grown to almost 1,000 acres in just a couple of hours. So far, in total, they've burned through more than 35,000 acres, destroyed an estimated 10,000 buildings, and these critical fire conditions could continue into the weekend. If you've seen any of the images, the winds.
Oh my gosh, it's like a wind machine. This is not
normal. I mean, yes, the Santa Ana winds have been around for centuries.
Yeah.
But this is not normal.
No.
And as we talked to Brittany Merlot yesterday, civic media meteorologist, she said, too, that these fires get to such a large, get so large, they are creating their own weather systems.
Yes. Yes.
Because as the warm air rises, mm-hmm. something has to replace it. And so it's a mess. I feel so badly for those people, just like we felt badly for the people who got creamed by Hurricane Helene in Western North Carolina
and Milton,
all those folks. I guess what sets this kind of apart is most of these wildfires tend to occur in more mountainous areas. Mm-hmm. This is very urban. These are very, very urban fires.
And I'm just going to say this because I heard it this morning. Please, if you hear individuals trying to spread any sort of conspiracy theories, shut it down. Shut it down immediately. This is not the time for that. This is not the case. It's not true. These fires occurred naturally because California gets fires, but this is not the time to be starting rumors. And I'm sure people in Congress will be having their own rumors, but I just, right now it's time to think about the people who are affected, and those fires are destroying the homes of the rich, the middle class, the poor, the everybody. It does not care.
Yeah. There's been a number of celebrities, Billy Crystal, and he and his wife have been in their house since they built that house in 1979.
Yeah.
Jamie Lee Curtis, I know Mel Gibson, a number of celebrities, but as you said, it's rich, poor, it's in between. Yep. Fires do not discriminate that way. And I can't even imagine how long it's going to take to start rebuilding.
Well, that's the other thing too, is because it's California. I mean, they're going to need help from the government. And
President Biden said the federal government will be covering all the costs for the initial disaster response. But again, January 20th, Donald Trump and the Republicans take over, so we're going to see what kind of conditions they're going to put on California in order to supply aid.
Oh, God, that's 10 days away.
Yeah, it's going to be here before you know it.
Ugh. I mean, President Biden, I know you're listening. He listens to the show. President Biden, just cut that check, like, right now. Like, give him 2/3 right now.
The other thing, too, and we had talked to Matic yesterday, Milwaukee Area Domestic Animal Control, and they've been inundated with dogs since Christmas.
Yeah.
That's just locally. Think of all the animals in California.
And
the folks who weren't able to flee with their pets, and they're turning them over to shelters. So they're going to be overwhelmed. And I would imagine those animals are going to start making their way across the country into shelters across the country. So if you're looking to adopt a pet, now's a really good time.
Yes, it is.
Now would be a very, very good time.
You can adopt, you can foster, you can take what they call a road test.
Yeah, foster, do it. Take them home for 5 days and see how it goes and see if you get along. So we have news coming up next. Stay with us when we return. Jim Santel from Amicus, a law review, will be here to break down all the complicated legal issues because we don't do that.
No, I just whine. I just like to whine.
You're listening to Matt Nair on Air. This is the vast, statewide, countrywide, we are global on the app, Civic Media Radio Network.
You're an organ donor, right? Well, here's a tragic fact. Approximately 20 people die each day waiting for precious donated organs. You could make a life-saving decision simply by getting that important dot on your driver's license. That little dot shows those who need to know that you've made a decision to donate organs at a critical time. Go to heroicdeed.com to learn more about the importance of organ donation and how you can make your wishes known. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. HeroicDeed.com.
Good morning. Welcome to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, and our resident young person, Calvin, on the board. Coming to you live from our studio here at Radio Park in Racine. You can always join us. Call or text. The number is the same, 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. It is Friday. Dan Schaefer will be here from the recombobulation area after 11 o'clock, so stick around for that. Just a reminder to hockey fans, tonight, Wisconsin versus LIU. Our broadcast starts at 6:30, and you can listen to that action tonight on WFHR in Wisconsin Rapids. Wisconsin versus LIU hockey tonight, 6:30 broadcast start on WFHR in Wisconsin Rapids. He is the host of Amicus, a law review, Saturday mornings from 9 to 11 across the network, and a former U.S. attorney and still practicing attorney. Jim Santel is here. Good morning, sir. Thanks for joining us.
Jane, Greg, always a pleasure and an honor, especially on a busy news day like today. 10 days out from a thing called an inauguration, and our president, our future president, much in the news in at least two venues today.
Yeah, well, first of all, we can now call him convicted felon Trump because he appeared virtually in New York court this morning about the 34 charges. And these were fraud charges, correct, Jim?
Absolutely. This is violations of New York law, state law. 34 of them. And to add to the importance of what you're saying, Jane, remember this was a conviction based not upon some political or partisan effort. This was a jury of his peers finding what? Unanimously, all 12 of them, beyond a reasonable doubt, that Donald Trump committed exactly what you just said, which is violations of New York law, fraud and false statements in records. People sometimes talk about this as the hush money case, but in fact, it's much more important, as you and Greg and others have noted repeatedly. This is really one of the first election interference cases. This was Donald Trump's attempt to skew votes, to skew the elective process way back in 2016, So to dismiss it just as a technical documents case or a fraud case based upon some records that were miskept, not the case, much more important. And again, 10 days from now, a gentleman will be standing on the west side of the Capitol building, raising his right hand, promising to swear to allegiance to the oath and also the Constitution as a convicted felon in the United States of America. Never before in 248 years in American history have we witnessed that. We'll do it in 10 days.
It begs the question, if a man would go to such lengths to skirt an election, the electoral process in this country, how do we believe him when he says he's going to stand for the Constitution? I'm not a lawyer, but that's all I'll say on that.
I think that, you know, there you don't have to be a lawyer at all. It's probably a good thing not all of us are lawyers, just because you can have that common sense response. You know, I always say the law should reflect what people generally understand, should be based upon common sense and good discretion and judgment, those kinds of things. This is one of those situations where you look at that, not the split screen, you look at the single screen and you see a man who, but for timing, but for some other issues we've also discussed, should still be facing federal prosecution in a couple of venues and another state prosecution there in Georgia. He has been the recipient of an awful lot of very good, effective lawyering that has delayed things. This one he did not delay, although he tried to the bitter moment, as late as last week, to get his friends to the Supreme Court. Even there, Jane and Greg, stunning to think about this, that four members of our Supreme Court thought, nope, we should delay this sentencing. Let's stop it from going ahead. Thank goodness we have, again, five of them who said, no, this has got to happen. There, too, what has happened to the rule of law? This is what we do in America after a jury has found someone guilty. You can file all kinds of motions. That's appropriate. A good aggressive defense, that's what we want out of a system. But in the end, we sentence someone for the crimes for which they've been committed. And we have four members of our Supreme Court saying, no, because we don't know exactly why, but presumably because he's going to be the president, therefore he's above the law. He's above the process that attends every other defendant who's out there in state and federal court right now thinking, where is my delay that ends up again in this kind of a situation? Well, it didn't happen for Donald Trump. He does get, frankly, also a very, very lenient sentence, really almost a non-sentence, this non-conditional, unconditional discharge, no fine, no right. Prison, no supervision. The important thing, however, again, as we said at the top of the segment here, he goes into this, he is a convicted felon, and that is an appropriate, not only legal, but also historical appellation to put to him now and presumably forever.
I just want to recap the details of this real quickly, Jim, this whole Stormy Daniels payoff. So Donald Trump had his henchman, Michael Cohen, cut a check to Stormy Daniels so that she wouldn't spill the beans about the fact that she was sleeping with him right after his wife had a baby. He didn't want this to get out before the election. So he paid her off. But instead of just admitting and writing it from a personal checking account, he hid this in his business records. And that's where the fraud came in, correct?
That's exactly right, Shane. That's the closing argument. You could have been there and made that on behalf of Alvin Bragg and his attorneys. That's exactly what this is all about. And even to be more in the details, if you will, the fraud was disguising this supposedly as legal services that his attorney, Michael Cohen, provided. And of course, Michael Cohen, who's since been very much estranged from Donald Trump, takes the stand, as do the documents themselves, and say, no, that has nothing to do with it. That's the fraud, that you're describing this as him providing some legal services, when in fact, it was repaying Michael Cohen for the money that Michael Cohen, out of his own mortgage funds, paid to Stormy Daniels to keep this all afloat. It's, on the one hand, it's sort of complicated. On the other hand, it's not. It's garden variety fraud. Remember also that all this happened. You got it just right in terms of the timing too. Remember the Access Hollywood tape?
Oh, yes.
This also kind of came from that, when there was a sense of, oh my gosh, we're going to lose the election, right? We now know based upon other investigations, including this one, we can't possibly have yet another shoe drop here. This can't come out there. Stop this at all costs. Shut her up. You reach out to David Pecker, who is the head of this rag that was going to publish this story. catch and kill was the phrase.
Yeah.
Stop this from happening. We can't suffer any more damage. That's also a part of the fraud.
If you're just joining us, Jim Santel is our guest. He's host of Amicus, a law review across Civic Media Saturday mornings from 9 to 11. I highly encourage you to check out Jim's show. If you can't listen live, you can always listen to it as a podcast. Just go to civicmedia.us, click on shows, and that will take you to Jim's show, Amicus, a law review. Going back to Donald Trump calling Samuel Alito. Come on. What are they sharing recipes or what? I'm just calling Sam so we can chat.
Right. We wish, Shane, that they were, well, I don't know if we do wish that they were sharing recipes, but that would be a whole lot more benign. It gets even more interesting the more you dig into this. So what you have here, of course, a couple of things. We also know that Donald Trump was seeking, again, it happened shortly after the phone call takes place. His lawyers go to the Supreme Court and say, stop this from happening. That timing in and of itself is problematic because it certainly suggests that, gee, you want to prime the pump. You're having contact with someone who's deciding that you're, frankly, a personal matter, probably hours before you're doing it. It gets even more curious because, of course, you've got Sam Alito saying, well, all this was just about a former law clerk of mine. He was calling as kind of the human resources person from the White House to check on whether or not this is a good guy. First of all, somebody else in the staff can certainly do that down the road. It doesn't have to be Donald Trump himself. Second, it now appears that the reason why the call was made was the L word once again, loyalty. Checking to determine whether this young man, who was probably very bright and good and perhaps deserves a position of whatever Donald Trump may put him in, whether he was sufficiently loyal to Donald Trump. This is a loyalty test on whether or not he could actually produce an associate justice who would speak on his behalf, because there were concerns about when he was in this candidate, this former law clerk, in justice, did some things that prompted some of the loyalists, some of the transition folks, to be concerned about his loyalty. And so this just gets deeper and deeper. The big issue, of course, the big headline that you just noted is just that. The president of the United States of America, frankly, I would go this far, should never be picking up the phone and calling a Supreme Court justice about anything, not at all. If you've got to have some contact because you're inviting them to a very official event, somebody else can do that. Secondarily, the notion that you're having conversations, arguably related to something not associated with the call, the appearance is so bad, it's just one more reason why a lack of an ethics code, as the three of us have chatted before, is so profoundly telling here. We wouldn't be doing these things if there was an enforced ethics code that prevented these kinds of appearances and realities of impropriety. We've got just one more, comes in the wake just a couple of weeks ago, more disclosures from the Senate Judiciary Committee that Clarence Thomas still didn't report a couple of more vacations and report and connections.
Why start now, Jim? Why start now? Come on. I've been doing this for decades. It's been going great.
But it just never ends. And that's going into this next term. Now we've got this precedent now. So the president picks up the phone and calls the other branch of government. And again, we rely upon the accuracy or the inaccuracy of the reporting on this. It is just one more reason for all of us on all sides of the political aisle to be outraged and to say, no, this should not happen. But as you just said, Jane, add it to the list.
But I think too, Jim, I would like to think that that is one thing on which we can all agree, is that our Supreme Court justices have to adhere to some kind of code of ethics that they don't police themselves. That's where the problem is. We'll follow our ethics. Trust us. We're Supremes.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
And it was all nine. All nine said that.
All nine said that.
All nine.
Right. They all signed off on the document. Interestingly, you know, the little, not so much crack, but the good thing coming out of this, if there is a good thing with a very small g, you do have a couple of the justices, needless to say, they're the predictable justices, including Elena Kagan, who says, you know what, we do need something enforceable. And maybe what we should do is appoint a special panel of lower court judges, experienced, tenured, appellate court judges, some district court judges. And if there are questions, number one, about conduct, especially when it comes to hearing cases in advance of that. Gee, should I be hearing Jay Mattenair's case? Greg Bach is now in front of me. I'm good friends with both of them. Should I be hearing that case? Maybe that panel, if it doesn't already tell you, the answer should be no. But maybe that panel can be the enforceable mechanism. And of course, that goes nowhere because it would require enforcement.
That's the problem. I would love to see that proposal go in front of Alito, Thomas, and Kavanaugh.
Yeah.
Three guys who love to be told when they're wrong or right or told what to do. Right. I'm not going to speak to the ego of the other six, but those three specifically, oh my goodness.
But Supreme Court Justice and witch hunt fan Samuel Alito, because that's how I will always refer to him since his writings in the Dobb decision where he cited some guy from the 16th century about witch hunting, perfectly applicable when we're talking about life for women in 2024, 2025. The fact that no one is he should have recused himself from so many cases already, Alito in particular.
Absolutely. We've got so many conflicts here. And all you need to do is look to the left, left or right a little bit more and see Clarence Thomas, right, who's got all these problems. Again, a conflict problems, not only with respect to this fellow named Harlan Crow, other things out there. Clarence Thomas, as we know already, has as a spouse. Her name is Ginny Thomas. And even when it comes to all those issues related to the investigation of January 6th, he doesn't recuse himself. We know that Ginny Thomas was very much in contact with White House folks at the time. All kinds of problems, too many, and it's just almost overwhelming. Unfortunately, it should not be the precedent going forward.
Jim Santel is our guest. We're going to continue our conversation. Bill, I see you on the line. Hang on. Eileen Cannon, where did you get jurisdiction in this? That's coming up. You're listening to Matt Mayer on Air on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Good morning. Welcome back to Matt Mayer on Air. Jane Matt Mayer, Greg Bach, and Sweet Calby on the board, coming to you from our studio here at Radio Park in Racine. Join us, call or text. The number is the same, 855-752-4842. Leave a comment on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and the platform that Jabba the Musk continues to actively ruin. After the 11 o'clock news, Dan Schaefer will be here from the recombobulation area. And next hour at this time, we will wrap it up as we always do with This Shouldn't Be a Thing. Today, it's the Whoops, Wrong Number edition. Stick around for that. Right now, though, we're joined by our colleague Jim Santel, former U.S. attorney and also host of Amicus, a law review across the network Saturday mornings from 9 to 11. Jim Texter wants to know, do any of the Amicus shows give information on how to invoke Trump-style delays to personal legal problems?
There are times when just by virtue of describing how this is done, that maybe we are providing that kind of inappropriate legal advice. And again, I know the caller is saying that somewhat tongue in cheek, but it's a reality. And undeniably, that was Donald Trump's completely successful until this morning, process. And that is continuing to barrage all of us, including the courts, with motions, many of which are frivolous. Yep. Even this morning, Juan Merchan, again, is sort of implicitly noting that Donald Trump has just been over the top in terms of delays and requests for things that have been denied already. This is what Donald Trump does. I hope that's not the lesson of our Saturday morning broadcast. I hope instead we're talking about the ways in which all good litigants, whether you're a lawyer or not, should be addressing the merits. And Donald Trump, under these circumstances, I am no longer afraid to say it. This is not hyperbole. Plainly, there is one person who is above the law, and that is Donald Trump. It is the President of the United States of America. That we knew from what John Roberts wrote way back in July. And now we've got an affirmation of the incarnation of that. And now Jane and Greg, we hold on for the next 4 years to see if he exercises even more of that and says, hey, Supreme Court told me I can be free from those entanglements. What is next? What kind of liberty does that give him with the imprimatur, with the okay of the United States Supreme Court? That's the world in which we're living in 2025.
We're going to talk about
the nation we're living in.
We're going to talk about Judge Eileen Cannon in Florida stepping into this release from Jack Smith. But we have Bill from Oconomowoc has been very patient on the line. Good morning, Bill. Did you have a question for Jim or just a comment?
Just a comment, but kind of a question also. I really believe we need an independent panel, six people. They could be retired judges, what have you, six conservatives and six liberals. And they're going to vote on based on honesty, integrity, humanitarianism, diplomacy, humility, and all the things that go into making presidents great. We saw some great presidents at Jimmy's funeral. And I don't know if Jimmy planned it, but his timing was impeccable to bring to light what real character is. And when real character isn't there, we all saw on TV how Trump was isolated from the group. What are Jim's thoughts on creating a panel and maybe even an app that would give all of us some input? You know, polls are everything.
Thanks, Bill. Appreciate it. What do you think, Jim? Do you think that's even within the realm of possibility?
Right. Well, certainly Bill's recommendation about a panel that would monitor these ethical issues inside the Supreme Court, as we just said, that I think is entirely appropriate. And beyond that, you know, one of the good things that federal judges, both lower court, district court, and appellate court judges sometimes do with authorization within the ethics rules, although there's not a panel of the sort, that a broad-based panel on all sorts of issues, they do get out there from time to time and they speak on non-case-related issues. They talk about things like integrity that Bill was just commenting about and the reasons for government acting the way that it does. It's got a lot to commend itself. Hear, hear, Bill. I approve entirely, as I suspect Jane and Greg do also.
We got about 3 minutes left, Jim, and I do want to talk about Eileen Cannon, Donald Trump's favorite attorney who he appointed. And a headline from the Bulwark reads, Trump's favorite judge scrambles to block Jack Smith's final report. How does she even have standing in this?
She doesn't. She has no jurisdiction and no basis for doing this. Along the way, the small way of looking at this is, remember when she dismissed this case, this is the Mar-a-Lago documents case. This is arguably the national security case, again, to underscore the importance of it. What she says is, well, Jack Smith had no authority to do what he's doing. He was improperly appointed. Again, contrary to every piece of precedent that's out there, she dismisses the whole thing. And at the time, she says, I am done with this. Take this off my docket. Everything is off. Stop any pleadings. We're tying this up and throwing it, frankly, into the bin of cases now resolved. She steps back into it, apparently, contrary to that. And she says, well, wait a minute. I think I'm going to impose this restriction about the release of the report on both January 6th and also the documents, which is wildly beyond what she can do. Goes up to the 11th Circuit, which is the other jurisdictional issue here. The 11th Circuit has the case. And again, in our system, the lower court judge then doesn't do anything more. And what did they do just again about 24 hours or so ago? The 11th Circuit basically slaps her down for a third time and says, no, you can't do this. There is legislation. The law requires a report to be issued. The one thing they do sort of curiously is they say, we're not going to overturn her 3-day order. And so they're giving parties about 3 days until Sunday to do anything more. Presumably on Sunday, we're finally going to get what Merrick Garland wants to release, which is going to be the J6 report. He may or may not release all of the documents case. Why? Because there's still a couple of defendants who are banning about out there, the obstruction folks. But we're going to get something, presumably. And again, this is strike number 3 for Eileen Cannon. Jane has just said no jurisdiction, and she continues to do what she thinks Donald Trump wants her to do.
Cassandra on the live stream says she's going to be the next Supreme Court justice, and if there's an opening, I think that's a pretty fair bet. Cassandra also says, why are they so worried about releasing these reports? It's not like anybody's going to read it anyway. Jim Santel, thank you so very much. Listen to him tomorrow, 9 to 11, across the network for Amicus, a law review. News is next. Keep it right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Thanks, Jim.
Always a pleasure, friends. Take care.
The national news cycle never stops. but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.